Chapter 2, The Myths of Management. You may wonder if it's possible to play the great game of business anywhere, in a division of a giant conglomerate, or in a factory with a dominant union, or in a company that doesn't share equity with employees, or have an intelligent bonus system. In fact, the game started in a place exactly like that. It was a very small department of a huge international plant in Melrose Park, Illinois. Melrose Park was one of the toughest plants in the country in the 1970s when I worked there. We had racial incidents, death threats, burning effigies, bombings, shootings, aggravated assaults, you name it. Workers and managers were constantly at each other's throats. There were two or three walkouts a year when things were going well. In a bad month, there were two or three work slowdowns as well. Every time we turned around, we heard another rumor that the factory was going to be shut down because of labor problems. Let me tell you, we had more than our share of losers. I know. I was one of them. My father, who was a general foreman at Melrose Park, got me a job as a mailboy in the purchasing department. I was 19 at the time. I had already been kicked out of college in a Catholic seminary for disciplinary reasons. I'd lost a job at General Motors for playing poker on duty. I'd flunked my army physical because of an accident I had. Someone had thrown me through a plate glass window. After being rejected by the church, academia, the military, and GM, I figured Melrose was my last chance. For reasons I still don't understand and can't really explain, it turned out to be the ideal place for me. I wound up having 10 jobs in 10 years, by the end of which I had a pretty good education in management. People came up with a slogan for me, "Have shovel, we'll travel." Whenever there was a mess that had to be cleaned up, they would put me in the middle of it and let me dig my way out. The odd thing was that I had found I had a hand in creating that mess in the first place. I'd do something in one job and not even be aware of the effect it was having until I got to the next assignment. Then I'd have to undo the problem I helped create. But I did learn how to get things done. I did that by ignoring most of the advice people gave me on how to be an effective manager. The practice of management, I discovered, is filled with myths guaranteed to screw up a company as badly as Melrose Park was in those days. The real secret of an effective manager is to learn how to ignore those myths. You have to ignore them if you're going to get people to play the great game of business. Myth. Don't tell people the truth. They'll screw you. Being honest with people was unheard of at Melrose Park and most places in the 1970s. The whole mentality was cover your ass. If your job was to get parts, you never told your suppliers how many you really needed or when you really needed them because they would screw you every time. The experienced schedulers told me, "Lie, kid, lie. If you've got enough parts to last you a couple weeks, tell them you'll be out of stock by Friday." It got to the point that nobody trusted anyone else's numbers, and for good reason. They were all lying to each other to cover their asses. But I had an advantage. I didn't need to cover my ass. I didn't have a family. I didn't have responsibilities. So when suppliers asked me what the situation really was in the factory, I told them the truth. I told them exactly how many parts were in stock and how long we could go before we started having problems on the assembly line. I discovered that the more honest I was with them, the more they relied on me. They had their own scheduling problems, and they were desperate for information they could count on. As a result, they protected me. I was their source, and they made sure that they would never let me down. The same thing happened when I began dealing with people on the shop floor. There we had a situation where nobody believed the schedules they were given because, once again, everybody was covering their asses. Let's say the schedule called for the assembly line to make 50 Model X engines and a 50 Model Y engines on a given day. The people on that line, however, didn't have enough parts to fill the quota for the Model X's. Instead, they did 2 days production of Model Y. That way, they kept the line up and running. Their asses were covered, but they totally discombobulated everybody else, who now didn't know what the line needed or when. I went to the guys in assembly, and I said, "Look, from now on, we're going to live by the schedule we put out, and we're going to schedule from the assembly line backwards. If a part isn't here when it's needed, we're not going to make do with the parts we have. We're going to shut down the line." Everyone was shocked. They said, "You can't do that. The assembly line is God. You can't shut it down." I said, "Oh yeah, just watch me." As it turned out, I had only shut it down twice. After that, people got in sync real fast. They decided if I was willing to shut down the line to give them a schedule they could count on, they would make sure they got those parts on time. As for me, I made sure they had everything they needed to meet the schedule. If one department got into trouble, we'd send other people in to help them out. Sure enough, our production began to go up. When I started the job, we were doing 100 engines a day. By the time I left a year later, we were up to 300 engines a day. Another myth of management is that nice guys finish last. We have all heard how you have to be an SOB to succeed in business, how you have to step on another person to get results, how it's okay to throw your weight around because it's a tough world and you win through intimidation. It's all a crock. I worked on the shop floor. Believe me, nobody there wants to hear a guy telling you to bust your butt if he's rolling around in a Mercedes and beating up the people he works with. When you flaunt what you've got, intimidate, and treat people badly, you lose power. I watch guys like that throughout my life. I warn it's just a matter of time before they get theirs. That's the third higher law. What goes around comes around. Whenever I see someone take advantage of other people or acting like an SOB, I know his days are numbered. People like that take themselves out of the game. They don't understand the game. They have no idea. But there are enough jerks out there promoting this garbage to keep the myth alive. I think it's one of the reasons so many people hate management, which is a big problem because that keeps good people from becoming managers, and businesses need all the good managers they can get. A lot of workers turn down management jobs because they're afraid of losing their friends. When I first became a manager, I realized the problem wasn't me. I hadn't changed. They were the ones who were different. Their attitude was, "You're the boss, and we can't sit with you anymore." Eventually, I got fed up and called them on it. I said, "What's this? You mean because I have a title, my underwear's different now?" I overcame the problem and forced them to overcome it, but it wasn't easy. That's another myth, that managers have it better than workers. There's a reason you get paid more money when you become a manager. You're taking on more responsibility, and you're giving up some of your freedom. When you become somebody else's boss, everything you do gets scrutinized in a way it isn't when you're on the line. You have to set examples. If you don't, you're going to fail as a manager. Being an SOB gets you nowhere. That's why I get angry at the loudmouths who talk about winning through intimidation. Not only are they dead wrong, but they're promoting one of the most destructive myths in American business. Another myth of management is a manager's job is to come up with all the answers. It is very common for managers, especially new managers, to think they're supposed to have solutions for any problems that arise during their watch. That kind of thinking can get you into deep trouble. For one thing, it sets you up to fail because no one has all the answers. It also undermines your credibility because everyone knows that no one has all the answers. It also isolates you from people. A big pitfall is the notion that managers need to be perfect. I know supervisors who can't hold a meeting because someone might ask a question they can't answer. I know CEOs that can't leave their office unless their ties are straight and every hair is in place. Managers like that wind up hating their jobs. They feel they have to live up to an image, to be an idol, a representative of a position. At the same time, they're failing as managers because they are not doing what every good manager has to do, build confidence in other people. To do that, you have to show people you're human. You're not God. You don't have all the answers. You make a lot of mistakes. If you try to be perfect, you send the wrong message. You're much better off sharing problems, using the people you work with to come up with the solutions. That's another lesson I learned at Melrose Park. I remember at one point the truckers went on strike and shut down the highways. We couldn't get steel from the U.S. plant in Gary, Indiana, because snipers were shooting at the trucks. You need steel to build tractors. If we didn't get the steel, people would be sent home. They wouldn't get paid. They couldn't put food on the table. I was in charge of making sure we had the steel we needed, but I didn't know how to get it past the snipers. So I brought five of my guys together, and I told them that this one really had me in a bind. How are we going to transport 2 tons of steel from Indiana to Illinois without someone getting their heads blown off? Someone said, "School buses. They wouldn't shoot at school buses, would they?" Another guy said, "It depends on who's driving the buses. They wouldn't shoot at nuns, would they?" That's exactly what we did. We dressed up guys as nuns and put them in school buses. They drove up to the steel mill and loaded the buses with steel bars and drove back to Melrose Park. We were always doing crazy stuff to keep the lines running. Nothing stopped us. We came up with the most outrageous things you ever heard of, and they usually worked. I didn't come up with the answers. We all did. I learned a lot from those experiences. Aside from sharing problems, they taught me about the importance of managing with the downside in mind, of having contingencies and trapdoors, because failure is part of the process. You can't succeed if you don't fail sometimes. But if you're not prepared for the failure, it's going to take you by surprise and knock you for a loop. The secret is to make contingency planning a habit of mind. It was a habit I developed as I moved up the ladder and found the problems kept getting harder. I learned I could respond better if I already had a fallback position, an idea about what to do if the unexpected happened. Maybe it was just a plan to call certain people together, people I could share a problem with, but at least I wouldn't be shocked. I wouldn't freeze. I could spring into action. That was critical because the people in the factory were depending on us. When you have the responsibility to take care of other people, you do whatever it takes to get the job done. And that's the fourth higher law. You do what you got to do. You drop everything else. You spend night and day on that one thing. You figure out how to motivate, push, sneak, threaten, or do whatever is necessary. People's livelihoods are at stake. Take the hill. You got to take the hill. Another myth. It's a big mistake to promote people too quickly. I always promoted people as fast as I could, contrary to conventional wisdom. I liked giving them opportunities and didn't want them to get bored or stale. But I also had an ulterior motive. It made my job a lot easier to have friends all over the company. Tunnel vision is a big problem in business. I instituted a program of cross-training for the people I work with. They learned to see different aspects of the business, and I built up my own communications network. Because I was promoting people so fast, I wound up having a lot of positions to fill. What I didn't have time was to do the in-depth interviews and evaluations. So I looked for people who had been captains on their intramural teams in college. To be a captain, you have to be picked by your peers. So I knew there were winners, and we needed winners right off the bat, because we were operating in a real losing situation. Another myth, don't worry about the big issues, just do your job. Like most American companies, International Harvester operated on the principle that everyone should do their specific jobs he or she was assigned. The corollary was that you should only give people the information required to do the specific jobs. Everything else should be treated as some sort of corporate secret. Somehow it became accepted that this is the only right way to run a business. This is the biggest myth of all. If you want to make things happen, you have to get people to raise their sights, not lower them. That means letting them see the big picture. It means showing them the challenge, letting them the experience, the fun of the game, the fun of winning. It means motivating people with humor and excitement, which go a heck of a lot further than yelling and screaming and throwing tantrums. I learned all this in one of my first management experiences. I was in charge of getting parts into the factory, and I began going to weekly management meetings where I started hearing the company secrets. At the time, we had a big contract to make tractors for the Russians. The secret was that we were in trouble from the very start. The Russians had negotiated a penalty clause whereby they could charge us for every day we went beyond the deadline of October 31st. By October 1st, we were still 800 tractors short of the goal, and nobody knew where we would get the parts we needed to fill the order on time. The other manager said, "Keep it to yourself. This is real serious. Heads are going to roll." None of this made sense to me. For one thing, I didn't understand why we should focus on getting parts in the door when the real goal was to get tractors out the door. I certainly couldn't see the point of keeping it a secret. I put up a big sign outside my office saying, "Our goal, 800 tractors." I told people the whole story. Everybody thought I was crazy. They were shipping 5 or 6 tractors a day, and there were only 20 working days until the deadline. At this rate, we would be short about 700 tractors. To reach the goal, we had to average 40 tractors a day. When we looked closer at the problem, we began to see ways to improve the daily score. We discovered, for example, that some of the parts weren't making it to the assembly line. They came in and sat on the dock. That showed us that it wasn't enough just to get parts in the factory. We had to push them through the door and onto the shop floor. We also figured out that a lot of tractors were just missing a few key parts. If we targeted on those parts, we could dramatically increase shipments. It was a case of taking a big problem and dividing it into a series of little problems, which is the best way to solve any problem. But at the same time, we kept the big picture in front of everybody's eyes, and it worked. Suddenly, our daily total jumped to 55 tractors, and people got turned on. They were amazing. This was a factory where you never left your department, where you needed a pass to go to someone else's area. We had guys doing scheduling, production control, testing, shipping, the whole nine yards. They would come into the factory after hours and crawl over the tractors, figuring out what parts we needed and how many tractors were short those particular parts. We could go out on the shop floor and talk to the supervisors and the hourly people. We would get the schedule to be as efficient as possible and made sure we covered them. The numbers kept going up. When we hit 300 tractors, everybody took notice. We put up bar charts showing exactly what parts we needed, where they were coming from, and how it was going to affect shipments. People could see the whole picture. They could see all the pieces and how we just might pull it off. They began to believe. And there's nothing like it when people think they really can do something everyone said was impossible. Individualism goes out the window. The team takes over. Nobody lets anybody down. By the last week of October, the pressure was intense. Executives would come down and watch what we were doing. With 5 days left, I put up a sign saying we'd shipped 662 tractors. The place went wild. Will we make it? Will we just miss? At this point, everyone was involved. Assembly was going crazy. People couldn't wait to get the latest score. We arrived at the deadline of October 31st. On Halloween, the last sign went up outside my office window. 808 tractors shipped. What a celebration we had. We put balloons all around the sign. We had a party. There were pizzas all around. Nobody could believe that we had beaten the Russians out of their penalty clause. It was great, just great. That experience taught me a big lesson. I saw these guys get hungry. I saw them push and accomplish things they never thought were possible. I saw satisfaction on a daily basis. I mean, they didn't know they were working. I thought, my God, if we can get people pumped up, wanting to come to work every day, what a competitive edge that is. That's what nobody else is doing. And I learned something else. Secrecy is baloney. I decided that from then on, I was going to give my people everything I got. Eventually, that grew into the whole idea of teaching people how to make money. The fifth higher law. You gotta wanna. When you think about it, all the myths have one thing in common, what you might call the big lie. That's the notion that you can manage effectively by forcing people to do things they don't really want to do. It is just not true. People only go beyond work when their motivation is coming from inside. The fifth higher law, you gotta wanna, says it all. If people don't want to do something, it's not going to get done. Whatever goal you're talking about, owning your own company, being the best, building 800 tractors a month, if you don't want it inside of you, it's not going to happen. Management is all about instilling that desire to win. It's about instilling self-esteem and pride, that special glow when you know you are a winner. Nobody has to tell you. You just feel it. You know it.